This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
We haven't played as well lately. I think there's been just kind of some opportunities missed on offense. And, you know, you look at the month as a whole and 500 in the month, and obviously that's not what you set out to do, but there's going to be challenging stretches, parts of every year that don't go as well. So this group has a capacity to obviously go on crazy hot streaks like we've seen, but also I think our floor is really high just with the variety of things that we do well. So it's never what you set out to do, but also acknowledging there's going to be hard parts of every year and just responding as best you can.
That was Nico Horner on with the afternoon show. And guess what? He's going to be on today. Nico making his weekly appearance with Spiegel and Holmes this afternoon at 2:30. This is Rahimi and Harris on the score. We shift gears to talk a little Cubs because they finish up the month of June 500. They finished at 13-13. And I asked the question, is that good enough when you consider the Cubs are trying to win the division and they're playing a Cleveland team that just got beat pretty badly. They got swept by the St. Louis Cardinals over the weekend to the tune of 5-0, 9-6, and 7-0 on Sunday.
Yeah, rough times. The Cardinals have been shut out three of their last four. The Cleveland Guardians have been shut out in three of their last four games. Three straight losses, as you mentioned, Layla, to the Cardinals. And 13-13 doesn't sound great, especially when it's a team that you're expecting to do big things. But I would say this. If that's going to be their version of a June swoon, it's fine. Here's why it's fine.
June swoon usually means a good thing. Like, I need you to clarify that more, because
when I think of June swoon, I think of a bad thing.
Swoon, if you swoon over somebody, that means like you like what they've done. It's like, oh, I swoon over this decision that was made.
Oh,
like Bucks fans are like swooning over Miles Turner right now.
According to Google, swoon means to faint from extreme emotion.
Yeah, it's definitely June swoon is an old Wall Street adage referring to a potential dip or lull in the stock market during the month of June. It's been described in baseball terms for as long as I've been following baseball as a dip. But you are right in the whole swoon over someone, because that's an emotional thing.
I was not swooning over the Cubs June.
Yes, but the June swoon in and of itself is talking about a dip, like you take a precipitous dip, a fall. That's why when you said that, I was like, I understand what swoon means by itself, but June swoon in baseball terms has always meant a dip. As long as I've been following baseball, I don't know. I don't.
I think
the swoon sound like a good or a bad
baseball
word.
Almanac. The definition, literally, the falling apart after Memorial Day of a team that got off to a good start in April and May.
Do June you think swoon. That's what happened?
Yeah. Yes, they had winning months in April and May, and then they were 13-13. My point is, June swoon, if it's just going to be a 500 month and you're still going to be in first place and you're still going to be 14 games over 500, it's fine. I will accept that as a dip. 500 as a dip, it's not like you had a losing record.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I don't think it's necessarily, I don't see it as falling apart.
No.
But is it good enough? You can't have another 500 month and continue in a 6 month season.
I absolutely agree wholeheartedly. What I'm saying is, in the course of a 162 game schedule, in the course of a 6 month schedule, every month is not going to be great. We've seen it with a bunch of teams. The Dodgers had issues early. The Yankees just had a rough stretch. The Mets are, at last check, had lost 13 of 16.
The Mets did have some sort of June swoon. Like that was a fall apart. Like that is, they're talking like it's chaotic over there.
But they're still 11 games over 500, and if the playoffs started today, they would be in said playoffs. I think that's how you have to measure things. And we talked about this yesterday, so I wanted to present it to you.
Yes.
Because Russell, Mark Grody, and I talked about this yesterday.
Russell, who I'm seeing still people are talking about on the text line, how he went into a grocery store shirtless. This is what happens when I leave you all. The youngins are just running around doing crazy things.
He went for a run on Lakeshore Drive with his shirt off, got thirsty, went to the store to get water at the Jewel Osco, like a couple blocks from where he lives. But he did not tell us in telling the story about being asked to leave that he wasn't just sleeveless, he was actually shirtless. And we all said, what? You don't know? No shoes, no shirt, no service?
That's no like a, dice!
That's a pretty standard thing. That's a pretty standard thing.
Yeah, he
thing.
Left that key context out.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how he got around talking about it specifically until the end. Because I think that at the end when he's telling the story, he says, yeah, the manager asked me that. He said I had to leave because I didn't have a shirt on. And we're like, what? You didn't have a shirt on? And somehow he had not told us that he had no shirt on. he just made it sound like he was sleeveless in there, and that's why they were kicking him
well,
out.
Well, and the reason I asked the question is because on the text line, who says 630, put on a shirt, you heathen. This isn't Nam. And I'm like, what is going on here? So now I found out. 224, how does she not know what June Swoon means? You're right. I know no sports. I will quit my job for you.
No,
are
I think
you happy? So, I'll tell you when I quit. You'll
different
be the first
words
to know.
Can have different definitions in different contexts.
Also, I don't cover teams good enough to have June Swoons. That's part of the problem. Would I cover teams that lose 100 losses in a row, 3 seasons in a row, like I did with the Astros, or I grew up a Texas Rangers fan, or I covered a 90-loss Phillies team, or I did White Sox pre- and post-game where we were in the trust the prospects era. Do any of those teams sound like I would come across that phrase?
You are listening to Raheemian Harris here on 670 The Score. That would be the voice of one Layla Raheem.
You have to win to have to lose and then have it be an expectation.
If you come at the queen, you best not miss.
No, she I'll say I'll miss, and then I'll be like, I don't know what that phrase means because I don't gatekeep.
I like learning things.
But that's how I don't know what June Swoon means. But when I quit my job, you'll be the first to know.
There are no things that are being gatekept around here, except we should gatekeep the idea that we should all keep our shirts on when we go into public spaces.
I will keep my shirt on.
That's a message for Russell Dorsey.
That's a public service announcement.
And
Russell was going to make them swoon in the store.
That's what he was trying to do.
You can't out-sexy the law. A lot of people try.
You sure about that? You can't out-sexy the law? Because... it's happened. It has happened.
Oh, it is. But you know, certain rules for certain individuals, and that's another show.
I would also say legality is not greater than morality in my eyes. So there's that also.
I have a couple of issues just with the 500 record overall.
Okay.
At least for the month. Number one, you have, unfortunately, as much as you had money in the bank in April and May, you didn't earn enough interest with it in June. That was supposed to be a month where we thought you were going to add to your standings and your gap in the division standings by not just being like, if you told me at the point of July 1st that the Cubs would only be 2 games ahead of the Brewers, if you told me that a month ago, I wouldn't be happy with that. Because I'd be like, well, what the heck? The strength of schedule was weaker. You were supposed to have better output against certain teams. Injuries happen and this and that. Yes. So then I'm asking myself, well, what goes into that?
Well,
bench has to be better.
Yes.
Like, it can't just be relying on John Birdie, who I don't think is seeing a lot of time relative to how you want a playoff bench to be used. Some combination of Justin Turner and Vidal Brujan. Vidal Brujan is a pinch runner, just in that setting, in that sense,
John Birdie's a pinch runner. Yeah.
Right, but when you need their bats and you have to rotate your players as much as you do, and you do have offensive deficiencies at third, and also you're having to platoon at first, your bench has to improve. Like, they've got to include a bat in this trade deadline discussion at this point, in my opinion.
So it's interesting that you say that, because I've been scouring other teams' rosters, mostly bad teams, just trying to figure out people who might fit. And it's been a rough go.
You got any more of those teams with a good player in the scratch your neck? You got any more of those bad teams with a good player?
Yeah, that's the key, because I can find good players. I can find bad teams. It's hard to find the good players on the bad teams and to think there's enough of them to go around. So you've got to be very selective in who you go after. And we've been spending so much of this conversation on pitching. It is time to shift that to who can help you off the bench? Who can give you a depth piece? Because heaven forbid if one of your good and productive starting position players went down. You just mentioned the names, right? They'd have to call somebody up from AAA to play every day.
Well, and again, we're talking about shutout losses that the Guardians suffered at the hand of the Cardinals, by the way. The Cardinals also did the same thing to the Cubs. Yeah, they beat them 8-0. The Cubs did the same thing to the Cardinals. They can't shut them out. When they beat them 8-0, when they beat them 3-0. But it's the 2-0 loss to the Astros where I get concerned. You know, that's one where I'm saying to myself, yeah, Framber Valdez did a great job, as he tends to do, but there's a pattern that's emerging. You know, what are you doing to help out and use your bench in some of these scenarios where the strong lefties opposing, you know, Are you having a situation where either you're not getting your starters and you don't have enough to get to the bench once a reliever comes in offensively? Like, there's a way to use your bench where you've got to have more talent out of it for these cases to prevent the shutouts from happening.
The 2-0 loss is interesting. One, because the Cubs went 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position that game. Two, because from a textbook standpoint, you just probably didn't do enough against Valdez to get him out of the game earlier. Once he got to the start of the 7th inning, and he puts the first 2 men on, right? And you're thinking, okay, here we go.
That was a pretty vintage performance out of him.
Yeah, so he does what he does. And here's where the issue is. Craig Counsell pushed the right buttons.
Yeah.
Because even though he had Turner, which you can argue whether or not he should have been in the lineup, he comes up with 2 runners on. They bring in Brian Abreu out of the bullpen. He gives you Michael Bush. That's who you want in that situation, right?
Yeah.
And he pops up. And then after that, it was, do you know what strikeouts look like? Because if you don't, I am about to show you for the next 3 innings or 2 2/3 at that
point. But if I ask you on its face, like, do you think you have enough with your starting 9 and your bench to go toe-to-toe with a guy like that every day when the playoffs are the standard? I know it's an American League team, but when you do get shut out in those ways, you know, and you're seeing how it you're seeing the winning side of it, where you do well when you win and you have that confidence, but then you see the other part of it where, for example, you're losing 2 out of 3 to a team that a lot of people thought was down and on the ropes, you know? That's the part of it that concerns me. You have to, as much as we focused on pitching, they're just not as good as we thought they were going to be offensively, sustainably.
We are talking about the Cubs' struggles in certain matchups, specifically pitching matchups, in this case against left-handed starting pitching. Stop me if you've heard that before, here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.
We tried to tell you. And we tried to tell you early on.
It reared its ugly head early, and it's doing it late, and they continue to struggle against that, and that's why they need effective hitters against left-handed pitching.
And I think one, or at least if the starter is not who you're going to face, or you're going to do, if the starter is not who you're going to score your runs against, then you at least need to do more bench-wise. Just an extra bat would help just with matchups. It would help you wear down a bullpen, because good teams, it's not necessarily the starter who they end up wearing down. You know, it's once the starter leaves the game, what are you doing to their pen? And that's where I feel like, in this case, the bench could be better.
The goal against any good team, and you know what? Strike that. Against any team, is to get to middle relief. Once you get to middle relief of a team, that's your best chance to get big innings. If you can't do it against a starter, knock them out early, and you know they have a good bullpen late, the high-leverage guys, you got to find the lowest leverage guys you can. And the way to do that is get into someone's bullpen in the 5th inning. In the 4th inning, get somebody gone after 4 innings. That's the sweet spot right there for the Cubs right now. And apparently, they don't have much margin for error when there's a left-handed starter on the mound.
This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. In the grand scheme of things, do we know that teams have lackluster months? Sure. The Cubs in 2016 were 14-16 in July. We forget sometimes that you are going to have that setback. And at least, if nothing else, if your 500 month comes before the trade deadline, you can still fix it. I would rather have this discussion now than have it in September.
We have to have it now, because if you don't have it before July 31st, and this is day one of the final month of before the trade deadline, then you're not going to have enough bullets to fire at other good teams. So I'm glad we're having the discussion now. We're going to have a whole month of discussing what do the Cubs need, who should they go after, and what should they be willing to give up. That's the basis of the next month of Cubs baseball, really.
I also just consider, we've talked, I mean, Justin Turner gets a lot of discussion from all of us, the listeners. We talk about it on our show. And even on the text line, for example, like 219, I agree with you, the bench is the problem, but Justin Turner was an absolute horrible signing. I think if you're looking at his contract in the lens of a playoff team who doesn't hinge as much on these mid-level deals, then his numbers by themselves are not as concerning, the money that they spent. But wouldn't you know, the Cubs are one of those teams that pays a little more attention to how much money they spend. And they, you know, a $5 or $6 million deal does become something where you're asking what else could they have spent that money on.
Becomes prohibitive, right?
That's it. For a team like the Dodgers, it's nothing. You know, for a team like the Mets, it's nothing.
Clearly.
But on a team like this, it makes you wonder how much more they could have spent on the bench or in different ways. I also think, though, that you have to have your guys as a manager, the people who you really want on your team, who you think can help. We hear the Cubs all the time talk about how much they appreciate his presence. Players talk about what he means to them in the room. I think, I wonder at times if Craig Counsell said, this is somebody we need with this group to help with this scenario.
I'll say it like this. The Cubs need more on offense and at position player on their bench than a James Johnson in the Indiana Pacers, than a Udonis Haslam in his twilight with the Miami Heat.
How dare you say that about Udonis?
You heard what I said. Look at Udonis Haslam's stats his last, say, 3 seasons.
How dare you diss on Get Ready to Stay Ready?
How many games do you think Udonis Haslam played in his last, let's say, 2 seasons on the Miami Heat?
I think given the Heat and Udonis's meaning to the state of Florida and the history that goes with one Billy Donovan, for example, at the University of Florida before that, this is a different discussion. Justin Turner being here for $6 million, you think about it because you know that the Cubs, that $6 million to the Cubs could turn into two different people, for example. That $6 million, I wonder how much of that Mike Tauchman could have gotten.
Are we doing this now? Are we going straight into the Tauchman discussion? I'm here for the Tauchman discussion.
I appreciate Mike Tauchman, and I don't care who knows. And yes, that is a preview to Five on It at noon.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're up against it anyway, so we couldn't have gotten as deep as I wanted to get. We could do that at noon on Five on It. But between now and then, I know somebody we can ask about the bench.
Ian Happ. Indeed, the leadoff hitter himself. Ian Happ will join us ahead of the Cubs playing the Guardians for a 3-game set. It's his weekly appearance, and it is next on Raheemy and Harris on the Score.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. You obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
High fly ball right field. This one back. It's got a chance, and that one is gone. Nice piece of hitting, Ian Happ.
Here it comes. Line drive, base hit to right. Cubs win the ball game. Brujan scores. Ian Happ walks it off as the Cubs beat the Pirates 3-2 in 10.
Gold Glove Award winner.
Deep drive to left. That's trouble. Back goes Happ near the left field fence. Happ makes the catch right up against the wall.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
It was definitely an exhausting weekend, but I would much rather have that than 25 degrees playing. It's hot. You got to stay hydrated, but like, I love it. I don't love 25.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has 5 fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
We do toast Ian Happ. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Cubs Gold Glove outfielder Ian Happ co-hosts the Compound Podcast. It is now a part of Odyssey Sports. New episodes drop each Wednesday with the latest discussion on the Cubs and baseball. Download and listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, Ian.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I think the better question is, how are you after a day off where you finally finish your stretch of games, 26 total in June?
Yeah, it was good to get a day, everybody to kind of recharge. I think that stretch, just a lot of games and some hot conditions and travel. It'll be good to be home for a little bit, and schedule gets a little bit lighter here as we have a couple off days into the All-Star break, and then a nice schedule coming out of the break with home games and then the White Sox, Milwaukee, and back home. So it's a nice little stretch for us.
I'm real curious, Ian, just about the way that you approach when the schedule comes out and seeing how it lays out. What's ideal for you, and maybe in a year where things are different, such as this, where you play the 2 early games in Japan, how much did that help early, and how much are you maybe feeling it now that you haven't had as much time off the last month?
Yeah, it was interesting just the way they did the schedule. You know, one of the things that Major League Baseball tries to do is to not give a competitive advantage down the stretch. So, you know, they really stacked a lot of our off days in those first 2 months where we had a ton of, and you know, we were only playing six in a row. We played nine in a row was the most until kind of the beginning of this month. So it was a really, really nice April, May for us as far as off days go and rest. And then, you know, they knocked all those out so that we wouldn't have an advantage coming down into these summer months. So you understand it, but it was interesting just the way it played out this year.
Well, and it's something that you told us about. I think you were the first Cub to maybe speak up about just the anticipation part of looking at the schedule for the month of June. Like you said it, you go, you know, you're going to see different combinations in the outfield because Craig Counsell's going to try to rest guys. We indeed saw that. You know, you warned us about that happening. And I also think sometimes you're so powerful as a player, and you guys are so powerful when it comes to the mentality aspect of baseball helping you. You know, is it sometimes we're also, if you psych yourself out of it too much, can it also hurt you? Because you end up 500 over the month of June, you knew it was going to be a bear. You know, how do you feel like you guys dealt with that looking back at it, knowing you were anticipating it being?
I mean, I think anytime you have a month like that, you know, we obviously didn't play as well as we wanted to in June, as far as the record. I think we played some good teams, you know, ran into some teams that were playing really good baseball. And I think we played some close games in there that we didn't come out on top of. And that's just, those stretches are going to happen. I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot. It's never going to be a perfect season. You're not just going to roll through the whole thing with no issues or no hiccups. So I think when you have a month that you don't feel great about and it's 500, you know, you can move on from that and keep chugging. And I think we're in a position here to get back into a stretch where we're winning series and feeling like we're on a roll. I think, you know, that's our goal, is to get back to a place where we feel like every series we have a chance to take two out of three and just keep going.
Ian Happ, Gold Glover, joins us here on Raheem Ian Harris here on 670 The Score. And Ian, it's interesting because we've heard a lot about Seiya Suzuki kind of changing his approach at the plate, being more aggressive as a hitter. And we're seeing that he already has his career high in the major leagues in home runs with 22, and we're just halfway through the season. I'm curious as to, when you go back to coming off the injured list and took you a minute to kind of adjust, and we saw in the first couple months of the season looking very much like yourself as far as on-base percentage is concerned, and then the slug wasn't quite there. And then in the month of June, you hit nine home runs. Obviously, the slug is there, but the on-base percentage takes a dip. Do you attribute that to anything, whether it's the return from the IL, taking a different approach, either from the left side, right side, or both? How would you explain that to people watching you perform on a night-to-night basis?
No, I don't know that I would attribute to anything. I think you get – sometimes you have stretches where – the hits are falling and there isn't a ton of slug, especially early at Wrigley when blown in. I don't think through my career, if you look at my Aprils and Mays, there's just generally not a ton of slug there, and it shows up more in the summer. But yeah, I think June, you look at the batting average on balls in play is super low. I think there's not a lot of balls that I hit in the month and found grass. It felt like there was a stretch there where it had to go out of the park to be a hit. And I think that's, as a player, it's a really frustrating place to be, where you feel like if you put it in play, you're out, and if you hit it over the fence, you know, that's the only way to get on base is to walk or hit it over the fence. So it's just one of those stretches of at bats where not getting things to kind of go your way, and you know that keep going, that those things are going to even out over the course of the year. It's definitely, it's not the happiest place to be when it feels like it's not going your way in that sense.
We're talking to Ian Happ, who, and the Cubs, along with Ian, begin a three-game set tonight at home against the Guardians. They have a six-game homestand here at Wrigley before they get a day off on Monday. And I know we've talked a lot about Jameson Taillon with you. I'm going to ask you to also set your hate for pitching aside when I ask you what Matt Boyd has meant to the team. Even listening to his interviews is such a joy. How do you describe what he's meant, just playing with him as a teammate, and then also who he is as a person?
I mean, as a human, just such a such a good person. I think he's one of the nicest individuals. That was kind of the scouting report from Zach Short. You know, Zach had played with him, and when we signed him, hey Shorty, what do you got on Matt Boyd? He's like, he's the nicest guy you'll ever play with, and that is very true. He is a genuine, great human being. Goes about his business in a really good way. And I think for the young guys, you know, when for Ben Brown and for Cade, like having Jameson and Boyder as influences and Colin Ray as influences on just how to go about a 5-day rotation set, how to go about your work. Like it's been really cool to see those guys do their thing and kind of take the young guys under their wing and show them how to do it. But I think from a performance standpoint, just it's incredible what he's been able to do. We knew he was nasty, faced him last year with Cleveland, saw it firsthand, but the consistency and the ability to do it every time out. He commands all of his pitches. He's got a bunch of different looks for hitters. You know, if the slider's not working, being able to throw the changeup and the fastball, dumping the curveball, just he has a really good feel for all those pitches in a variety of counts. You know, the ability to, if he's 2-0 to a hitter, to throw a changeup in there to reset the count. It just all those things make him so valuable for our group, and it's been fun to watch.
Well, and I also feel like observing the AL Central, I've gotten a good observation of his profile and how he's changed. You know, he used to be this mow him down strikeout pitcher, and he can still, like you said, have great command, but he is a true example of what happens when you perfect the craft as a pitcher and how you can extend and change your career.
Yeah, for sure. And that even though he's had to battle some injury stuff throughout his career, that, you know, this stuff is still there. And he learned in the era with, you know, a really good staff in Detroit, and just he knows how to pitch. Like he really knows how to pitch. He knows how to get through a lineup a couple of times. He knows how to save pitches for big spots. Like all those things are really evident when you get to watch him every fifth day, and it's been a joy to kind of watch as he keeps going, and you kind of see all those little things pop up.
Ian, we look at the National League Central standings, and you guys had a bit of a gap. I don't know how much attention you pay to the standings just at the halfway point of the season, but you've got three teams in the Brewers, Cardinals, and Reds all still very much alive and with over 500 and within striking distance of the NL Central. Do you feel like you guys have what it takes to hold on all season, or expect this to be kind of nip-tucked the rest of the way? Because we're looking at this as, hey, the Cubs are 14 games over 500. They went through a bit of a June swoon with a 500 record, but now that the calendar has turned to a new month and an opportunity to kind of reset after that day off yesterday.
Yeah, I think the NL Central wound up the best record in baseball. Is that true? Collectively,
let's look.
That literally could
let's
be
look
true
at the
because
standings right now,
I could tell you this: three of the teams, if the playoffs started today, would be in the playoffs. The Cubs, obviously a division leader, the Brewers and Cardinals would hold down the second and third wild cards.
Yeah, I think it's a tough division. I think we've played good baseball. Obviously, there's things in there that we could have done better, and you know, there's still second half of baseball to be played, but it's a good division. Milwaukee's playing good baseball. You know, we got to see St. Louis for the first time. They're playing good baseball. You know, we've seen the Reds and what they can do. Got some young guys that have just come up, and we know that how well Pittsburgh has pitched it all year. And so it's a tough division. It's really, there's some good teams that are playing good baseball. I think we are worried about the Chicago Cubs and us going out and playing one day at a time. And that's all we can focus on. You know, there's still however many 75, 80 games left in the season. And we're focused on those.
I think too, if you look at the standings, there's a couple things that stand out. You have a 2-game gap between the Cubs and the Brewers as far as 1 and 2. There's a 1.5-game gap in the AL East between a future opponent of yours coming up, the Yankees and the Rays. And then there's also the totals in the NL West, which are 53 wins for the Dodgers, 45 for the Padres, 45 for the Giants, 42 for the Diamondbacks, but then 19 for the Rockies. So I feel like we're still kind of trying to assess. But when it comes to top to bottom in the gap, you can absolutely make the argument for the Central, and I think that's part of it too. You don't have a team like the Rockies in your division.
No, and the Pirates, you know, you go out and you face the Pirates, and they're probably going to play three games that are low scoring. That's just that the way that they've pitched it. You know, there's challenges to every team in baseball. You know, everybody's playing in the big leagues, and every game is hard to win. That's what makes it so much fun to come to the ballpark every day. But it's a really good division, and I think you've kind of seen that as the first half has played out, that all these teams have a chance to go on a run and play good baseball. And you know, we're happy with where we're sitting right now, and you know, it's our job from this point to keep going and to play really good baseball on the way in, and there's still plenty of time left.
Question: were you on the boat with Kyle Tucker yesterday? If not, what did you do on your off day?
I did not make it out on that boat yesterday. It was nice to get home and spend some time at home doing some stuff and be in the city. So I didn't make it out on that boat, but I know a bunch of those guys went out and were able to be on the water, which is really cool. And I think for some guys, probably their first time being out on Lake Michigan. It's a beautiful day for it. So it's cool when the group can get together like that and do some of those kind of things.
I feel like it is a great selling point. Like, people don't really know until they come to the city the beauty of the baseball off day where they get to hang out in the middle of the summer like that. Everybody looked pretty happy in that picture.
Yeah, what other city can you get on the water right in the middle of your city and go on a boat and enjoy it? It's a special part about being in Chicago in the summer.
We know you like to use your off day time wisely, and I thought that was a good one as well. Ian, what can you tell us about Connect Roasters? What's going on, and what's the latest?
Yeah, we're going to have an event at Brick House. I believe it's August 20th at Brick House. We're going to have another meet and greet, so we're excited about that. Tickets are available at connectroasters.com. And cold brew's going really well. People can check it out. Steingold's across the street next to the stadium. I think they're selling obvious shirts too, so you can go grab some cold brew around the stadium if you're going to be at the game this week.
Ah, yes, the Ian Happ Makes Me Coffee shirt. I know it well. Ian Happ, thanks so much for joining us here on Raheem Ian Harris on the Score.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great series tonight and a good 6-game homestand for the Cubs coming up. Up next, it is halftime. There is a movie that is sweeping the nation.
Is it Superman?
It is not.
Is it F1?
I'm going to get in trouble for this. Like, the audio is going to get pulled, but we have to say it.
Oh, okay.
The Trainwreck Poop Cruise movie on Netflix, the documentary.
I'm not familiar, but I'm sure you're going to explain all about it.
Not only am I going to do that, but apparently a wonderful sports opportunity that connects to a Chicago superstar was lost because of the poop cruise.
I can't wait to hear about this.
It's sad. There's a lot of twists and turns. I will tell you a tale. Next.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
That it is. It is halftime. We spent the first hour talking about a lot of NBA news, not just the Bulls. There was breaking news from our friend Shyam Charania as it was happening. We found out that Miles Turner, you are now a Bucks. But you know who's not a Bucks? Dame Lillard. And word on the street is he found out from the word on the street. How about that?
You know what? That's business.
That's cruel.
Bad business, but business all the same.
You guys know I love Damian Lillard. I don't like the mistreatment.
Dame, or as I like to call him, not quite Steph Curry.
Wow.
Don't ever forget who got swept in the Western Conference Finals without Kevin Durant.
You know, before your Warriors were running around shooting all the threes, that was Dame time in the playoffs.
Was it?
Oh, yes. Was yes, it? It was. The first and second rounds were Dame time.
And then the conference finals were what time?
I mean,
time to go home time.
He's just one of those dudes, man. You appreciate his talent.
To get swept like that, though?
You can't disrespect. No,
I'm not disrespecting his talent.
You can't wave him after he tore an Achilles and not tell him.
It's not his fault. He's playing in the same era as the greatest shooter of all time. It's not his fault.
We're going to continue to track that story, is what I'm trying to say. We shifted gears, talked about the 13-13 month for the Cubs, that was at 11, and then Ian Happ just joined us at 11:25.
It's nap time.
All right, so I had some time off, and me with my time off, that's when I watched some movies, because I don't watch movies ever. And everybody was saying, oh, you have to watch this movie about the poop cruise on Netflix. And the funny part was, I lived in Houston from where the boat docked, this national story at the time. So it was supposed to be a four-day trip, a three-hour tour, if you will, and ended up being many more days because the ship lost power because of an engine fire, and then drifted 100 nautical miles away from the closest port, and then had to therefore get towed by another towboat, waiting for the boat to get there, and then get towed over a certain amount of time. And apparently what happened was, if you're towing something, the weight shifts, and that's when all the sewage and the water that was sitting in the, you know, at the brim of these like showers and bathtubs and all of this, where people were having to do their business because there's not enough power to power the toilets, that's when it became the poop cruise, if you get me.
This is awful.
It really is. But what makes it even worse is, apparently, a colleague, Jamie Lamb, who ran a very popular blog in Houston at the time, could have interviewed Michael Jordan, but she was stuck on the cruise.
Wait, what?
Yes! Poop cruise victim missed chance to interview Michael Jordan while stranded. The quote from Jamie, "I ghosted not only GQ magazine, I ghosted Michael Jordan's agent." How about that? How horrible it was, because people didn't have power. Their cell phone batteries ran out. The cruises come with cell phone towers. Well, if you don't have a cell phone tower and you don't have power, how are you supposed to tell anybody you're stranded at sea?
This is awful.
So that's what happened. Jamie Lamb shared a personal story about how the cruise changed the entire trajectory of her career as a freelance sports writer. "I was a sports writer at the time. I can confirm she was. I used to read her stuff. And she got the opportunity of a lifetime. It was to cover a Michael Jordan story in Houston for GQ. I've been wanting to write for GQ since I was like 15 years old. I finally get the opportunity. I go on this cruise ship and lose all cell service and power. And I ghosted not only GQ magazine, but Michael Jordan's agent. I never got that opportunity back. I emailed and I called as soon as I had service, and they never answered me. I wasn't important. I was just a freelance writer." She said it changed her life. Less than a month later, she decided to pack up her stuff and move to Hawaii. She wrote a book and kind of lived off the grid. And I actually was wondering what happened to her blog, because I thought it was good.
Wow.
She said she slowly became a better person. I thought she was decent before. She said, "I know who I was that cruise ship, and I was bitter. I was angry. I was partying. I just wasn't a good person. I don't know that I'd be here today if I hadn't gone on that cruise ship and experienced that level of sadness and loneliness and made a life change."
So this is a redemption story. You had me in the middle, but the end was worth it. That's a good payoff.
I'm not an everything happens for a reason person.
I am.
Because I don't believe that everything happens for a reason. I believe the power lies within you. It is how you respond to that thing that happens that truly matters.
But the things have to happen for you to respond. That's why I think everything happens for a reason.
Well, I feel like sometimes bad things happen and it doesn't happen for a reason. They just happen. But it's up to you to make that interpretation and that announcement and answer for yourself.
Okay.
Sounds like she made the best out of a crappy situation. Anybody?
I mean, that's on brand for how this show started. So yeah, we'll ask.
I mean, heck, I didn't cover a baseball team that was ever good enough to have a June swoon, so, you know.
It's because there's poop, that's why.
I was in Houston, for example, and the Astros had 3 straight 100 loss seasons.
Okay, so you
also,
guys...
Also, I worked with her from time to time, and I thought she was nice.
Do you guys remember Mike Tyson? His last fight?
I remember Mike Tyson.
Do you remember who his last fight was against?
Jake Paul.
It pains me to say this.
Are we saying that was a fight?
Well, listen, apparently it was on the path. Everything happens for a reason, right? Because now Jake Paul is ranked and eligible for a WBA cruiserweight title shot. That's real boxing, Layla.
Well, I mean, he did do the thing. He worked the system where you keep fighting people and eventually you will get attention. That makes sense.
The World Boxing Association has ranked Paul 12-1, 7 knockouts, number 14 following his win Saturday over former middleweight champion Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., the social media influencer.
Julio Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, what did I say? I don't even remember what I said.
I'm just used to saying his name a bunch.
No, I am too. I lived in Sacramento for 2.5 years. The social media influencer turned professional boxer is now eligible to challenge WBA cruiserweight champion Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez for a world championship. Before the fight, the WBA suggested that it would rank Paul if he defeated Chavez. Paul, 28, outworked a listless Chavez over 10 rounds to earn a unanimous decision at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. Ramirez defended his WBA and WBO titles in the co-main event with a decision win over Uniel Dorticos. Paul is ranked one spot ahead of American Craig Parker, who's 20-0 with 20 knockouts.
Dang!
who most recently fought at heavyweight on April 1st and won via knockout. So this man is on the verge of fighting for an actual boxing title and getting real cred.
I mean, here's the thing, though. He's got to actually, if he actually has to box and not, as Kendall Gill says, play boxing, let's see what happens then.
I mean, he just did. So
Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is an influencer. He has the name. He doesn't have his dad's name. Well, he does, but
he's a former middleweight champion. He's a former middleweight champion. He's a real boxer.
But he's not the same.
It's fine. I just don't want to.
Former champ.
I'm not a hater. I'm just a don't want to see her. That makes sense. I don't want to see Jake Paul become a champion.
I don't think he will. I think he's got to fight somebody real, and that's when things get actual truth.
We'll see.
773, he brings the money in, unfortunately. I feel like that is a big part of it.
That's life today, right?
July 1st of all days is really the money day here.
It is.
Like, it is the most sports capital of sports capital days. We continue that discussion with Five on It as we observe Bobby Bonilla Day, NBA Free Agency Day, and even an NFL trade. How about that? That's
Love
next
it.
On the score.